Pat, okay.
Right, I'm here. This business about thinking that a party's finished. I mean, it's sort of not new. And in 2019, rather, this is sort of, well, the Labour Party is, you know, they've finished in a bad way, but very, very quickly, they've shown that no, they're not finished. And it was said, and I don't know if that was in 1997, but well, the Tories could be out forever by the Liberals and Labour. You know, they wouldn't get back, but it just seems to swing round again. But maybe it's different this time. I don't know. But the other thing I've been curious about how much emphasis there's been on this business of the share of the vote and the relationship of the share of the vote or the non-relationship of the share of the vote to how many MPs that they've got. And I looked up what happened in between 1945 and 51, because I thought there was something then about what the share of the vote and the relation to the number of seats that they got. And in 1945, the Labour Party had 47.7% of the vote and got 393 seats, and the Tories had 39.7% and got 210 seats. Well, 5 years later, the Labour vote dipped, but it dipped by less than 2%, but the Tories gained 88 seats at that time. And another year later, they had another election in 1951. And the Labour then gained the highest ever share of the vote. They went up to 48.8%, but the Liberal vote evaporated, leaving that party with only 2.5% of the vote, and the support of just six MPs. The Conservatives ended up with fewer votes than Labour, but 26 more MPs. So I thought that sort of well, I found it interesting anyway, and I went and spent half hour looking for the notes about it because of this sort of relationship. But it is the fuss about the first past the post or not. Well, of course, in effect, it doesn't make any difference to what happens to us, and it does mean that there are more sort of coalition governments and more problems sometimes in getting sorted out, in actually getting a party to taking power after an election. So well, no, I'll stop there. I really just thought that curiosity might be interesting.
Okay, thanks. We can come back to that. Dougie, you want to say something?
I went and voted for Real Socialism. I put SPGB on the thing as well. I might have to add them, yeah. Some problems. Okay.
You still there?
They changed the boundaries where I live as well, and so I've got Cat Smith as an MP now. Before it was David Morris. He lost because of the reform vote or whatever. If he had reformed to the Tory vote, they would have beat the Labour candidate, but she beat him because obviously the reform vote took votes from the Tories. It wasn't really Labour doing the Tories, and it was the Reform Party, right? All over the country, right? So, but reform, I saw Farage on television saying he's going to go after the Labour Party now that he's done the Tories down, right? So he's probably hoping that Labour make a mess, and the next election he can attack the Labour Party or whatever. So anyway, but I don't know. People don't seem to change over to the Labour Party from the Conservatives. They tend to go further to the right, to the Reform Party. That's a lesson we should learn as well, really. Oh, okay. Paddy's got something to say.
Yeah, Paddy, what's that?
Actually, that's not the case, because in France, what's happened is that there's been a polarisation. So a lot of the votes have gone to the far right, but a lot have gone towards the sort of Mélenchon coalition on the news pundits call the far left. I mean, you know, the soft left, I think we'd call them. But So what's happened is a sort of evacuation of the middle ground, and I think that's probably what would happen here, sort of this polarisation. But the thing I was wondering and curious about really is these reform voters who at the moment they think they've done such a clever thing and they're so pleased with themselves, and Farage has got this mile-wide grin because he thinks he's been so clever. But, you know, give him a year down the road when Labour inevitably start to balls it all up, because every government always will balls it all up, these reform voters are going to realise, the reason we've got a Labour government is because we voted reform and we split the Tory vote. And if we hadn't have done that, we might not have had it. They might still have had a Labour majority, but it'd be vastly reduced. I think I read one statistic that the reform vote, I don't know if anybody's worked this out, but if the reform hadn't been standing, how many fewer seats Labour would have won? I read one thing that it was at least 100 fewer that Labour would have won. So their majority would have been massively reduced. And this must, you know, I want an answer for the sort of general kind of political acumen of your average reform voter, but it must be borne in upon them at some point that they have actually engineered a Labour victory, so they're going to have to sit and put up with it and serve them right, really.
I'm not so sure that the people that vote for the reform are really right-wing Tories. I mean, it's the same sort of people vote for them as vote for the National Front in France. I mean, somebody put something on our forum about the breakdown of voters for the National Front the National Rally in France, and it said it had disadvantaged people, and most of the people they described as disadvantaged had voted for Le Pen, whereas I think that's the case. When you see the places that they won, you know, Yarmouth and Clacton and somewhere else, I mean, these are run-down places where most of the population or voters, you know, or a large proportion, you know, could be described as disadvantaged. As I say, you know, because I come from South Wales, I looked up the results in the South Wales, you know, mining valleys, and in all of them, where they put up a candidate, reform was second to Labour, and I think that there are certain people who want to cast a protest vote and who will never vote Tory. I mean, I don't think people in South Wales mining valleys will ever vote Tory, but they'll vote for something like your reform, and the policies of the leaders of reform are quite out of step with what the voters might want. I mean, the voters don't want free enterprise capitalism and unleashed and lower taxes on business and all that sort of thing. But what they would want would be more social benefits and that sort of thing. And we kind of enter into the psychology of people who voted for for Brexit, even though the EU had subsidised the places where they were working and so on. But so this is a protest. But I don't think they were. I don't think they would regard themselves as, you know, as natural Tories. So I don't know. It's a phenomenon in itself, and maybe it's happening in Britain. You know, what's happening in France, that the little person, is taking it out on the metropolitan elites and so on, which could be Trumpism as well. So it would be a quite different political movement from the, you know, traditional Tory party of, you know, the traditional ruling class party, if you like. These people don't necessarily support the traditional ruling class, and they're certainly not a part of it. Okay. Andy, again.
Well, only if nobody else wants to speak, because I've had a couple of turns already. So is there anybody else out there that wants to say anything before I do?
Well, I wanted to answer some of the other points that were made by other people, but...
I think you should go ahead then, Adam.
No, what I was going to say is we did this, you know, QR thing on our leaflets, and in terms of, you know, response we got, it's a ghastly failure. You know, we might have distributed 100,000 leaflets, but in Clapham and Brixton we only got 30 you know, responses, whereas in Folkestone it was half that. But the, you know, one thing which is perhaps intriguing and something to do with the future is the most successful one was the leaflet that we handed out in the non-constituencies saying, cast a write-in vote for socialism. I mean, that seems to have caught people's imagination more than, you know, vote for our candidate. You know, maybe this is something we could try at a future general election, a mass campaign of actually saying, cast a you know, a write-in vote for socialism, you know, rather than putting up a candidate. But that brought in comparatively more you know, responses than, let's say, the leaflets that were distributed, you know, by Royal Mail. On the other hand, we know that these were distributed to all households, and we know for a start that 40% didn't vote anyway, and others. So if you appeal to the general public, you know you're going to get a low rate of response. So I don't know. That's just a hint. Well, it hasn't been analysed properly. I mean, we've got to wait for, you know, Piers Hobson to see how long the people that did respond did spend on our site. That was just the, you know, another, you know, point of interest that was one of the lessons that we might be able to draw from what happened. Can I ask Howard to speak before you, Andy? No?
Adam.
Yeah?
Something we haven't mentioned so far is a campaign which was specific to Wales, and that was adverts in a dozen or so Welsh publications. Quite extensive adverts, which cost the party a bit of money. The EC agreed them. So a dozen or so Welsh publications, some dailies, some weeklies, carried adverts which said, we're not putting candidates up in Wales, but if in this coming election, if you agree with what we say, and we had a statement which sort of summarised our position, please decide to write World Socialism or something of that description across the ballot paper. Adverts look good in these various newspapers, Western Mail, South Wales Evening Post, South Wales Echo, etc. And we had these QR codes on them. Don't think they've been analysed yet. Don't know how successful that was. I suspect not very successful. It's a pity Brian Johnson's disappeared, because he was the one who suggested it to South Wales branch, and we went ahead and did it. You know, whether we get responses to the QR code or not, these newspapers collectively have, or so the organisation that runs them, which is the Mirror Group, they claim that they have about 160,000 readers. Now, obviously, not everybody who buys the newspaper is going to read it, but nevertheless, although it's going to be difficult to know the impact it's had in terms of people's consciousness, it's still think it was something worth doing. And it was good to see the party case in a sort of, you know, national or even local newspaper, but in what sort of 400 or 500 words. The statement we had is more or less the same one, I think, as the editorial in this month's Standard, in this month's Socialist Standard. I think I'm right in thinking that, Adam, aren't I? So, you know, if you have a look at that, you'll get a good idea what the statement said. And any results, by the way, Adam, that you know of?
I hesitate to say, but we had 3 replies.
In all? To the QR code?
Yes.
Right, okay. Right, okay. That's not good, obviously.
Honestly, that was the least successful of them. The most successful was the non-constituency one. And then I would say the one in Clapham and Brixton. And then the least successful, unfortunately, were those in press.
But didn't they also carry this advert online? And we had a message which I couldn't really interpret from newspaper saying such and such a number of people have actually, I don't know, sort of reacted. Can you say anything about that, Adam?
Well, I mean, they sent a thing saying, 154 people read the thing online. I mean, so presumably that the advertisements appeared in their online version as well. I think that means that that's the number of people that looked at that page. So I mean, people. Well, we know that people will have read the advertisements and will have read the election addresses without clicking on the or scanning the QR. I mean that's. But we've got no real way of measuring that. I suppose if you say 154 people did it, read it online, we still don't know how many people read it, with their daily with their daily or weekly newspaper. But what we're trying to discover is, get some statistics on this. And I mean, the other thing that occurred to me, which is much broader, is whether we should actually criticize capitalism rather than say how nice socialism is, because I don't know, it's I would listen to that Hustings debate, and Andy Thomas was was good, but he could see that he didn't get any cheers from the audience, from what he was saying, because it appeared to be completely irrelevant to them. But if we attacked capitalism, as we said, abolish capitalism rather than establish socialism, we might appear to be more relevant to people. I know this is a wider discussion which we probably need to have in the party at some point. Anyway, okay, we've got Andy and then Freddie.
Okay, I'm glad that you just said what you said there, just the last 3 sentences, Adam. Am I heard? Am I okay?
Yes, can you hear me?
I'm glad that you said that, Adam, because I also thought Andy Thomas was really very good. But I've got to be really quite frank. It just felt like the argument was like just not understood. It just was not understood. And I wrote down, actually, before you said that, I just wrote a few notes here, and something that we haven't touched upon, and I know it's a touchy subject and so on, but I don't think any subject should be off limits to discuss. And I wrote in inverted commas about the election, I put capitalist parameters. And basically, let's just take the issue of it's called immigration, basically, isn't it? And on that, we haven't even mentioned it, but one of the reasons that the Tories have lost the election is because they've made promises to reduce immigration, and clearly it's just gone massively through the roof. Now that's a touchy subject for us, I know that. But then all that reform do is they make promises that they'll reduce this immigration issue. Well, you know what they would call a problem. But isn't that a symptom of the crisis of capitalism? Capitalism can't solve its own problems. I mean, I work in a fairly humble industry. I'm a care home manager. All my staff are Indian women. That's the fact, right? They're all on the minimum wage. I'm not on a very high wage myself as the manager in that place. It's not a terrible job in my situation, but you know, it's not great either. You know, so capitalism can't solve its own problems. If I go to work and I say, "Do you know what? We all need a world in common. That's what we need." They would just think I'm some sort of hippie. No. I know that I could explain it perhaps a bit better if I had more time, but that's the world that we're living in now. And if you just take the, you know, we are the Socialist Party of Great Britain. Let's just take Britain as a whole. It's become a very diverse country. And to sort of engage with people across that whole spectrum of cultural background and, you know, all the rest of it, which should be celebrated. It's a great thing, you know, and basically people get on really well and that's good. But like, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? And I'm going to be dead honest now, right? When I was driving home after I'd voted, I thought, you know what? Wouldn't it be good if I could have put something on that ballot paper, or there was a box in that paper that didn't say the word socialist, that just actually says something about freedom, about liberty, about, I don't know, I can't explain it, but I honestly think we need to look at this in a really big way and look at the terminology we use, look at the way we frame our sort of politics and our whole, you know, take on the world. I've changed quite a lot because I would probably be regarded a few years ago as being one of the more kind of reactionary members of the party. I've changed a lot, not in terms of my own positions on things, but just in terms of the way we present stuff. And the party, we should be very proud of it because so few people do all the hard work. And yet, like, outwardly, The Standard is a brilliant publication. The web site is really good, all that stuff. I've got no kind of criticism of anybody, just praise. But maybe we just need to update and really, really think about this now. I don't think it's going to make a major impact immediately. But let's have a discussion about it, please. Thanks.
Okay, Freddie again. Freddie?
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Adam, some of your final words when you were speaking just a little bit earlier there was about having the wider discussion. And yeah, it's absolutely necessary. And I think Andy Davis makes, you know, sort of fair few points about, you know, where do we go from here? You know, what, if anything, can we learn? What can we do that's different? If I recall correctly, the conference, I think it was from Lancaster, Paddy may well remind me, that we were talking about, you know, sort of having perhaps the sort of wider discussion, etc., and that this should be put in motion, maybe having some sort of special sort of weekend school, etc., even discussing it here in this forum on a Friday night, etc. And I think it's really about time we did start to try and get on with doing that, as to what we can learn from it. And even if some of it is pretty old hat, yeah, I think we really need to do. I mean, I don't get particularly despondent about it, because I'd like to try and be more positive and see what other ways we can be creative, etc. Because when you look at the those voting figures for those two areas that the party stood in this year, now, I would certainly like to hope, but and I don't mean wishful thinking, but I would certainly like to hope that those 70-odd people in one area that voted for the party and 120-odd in another area that voted for the party. I mean, there's no way of knowing whom they are, but is there something in those particular areas, for example, that could be worked on, that could be developed? So that item for discussion that I mentioned just a few seconds back, I think that we need to look at getting some sort of weekend school, in addition to the sort of thing that that Mike Foster propagates, etc., or enjoys doing. Well, I hope he enjoys doing it. That we start to concentrate some efforts in that, particularly with the item for discussion that came via Lancaster, that we need to try and concentrate on that. Because if we look at where we are just now and this the Friday night, it's great listening to what the comrades are saying there, but it's, you know, we don't seem to be expanding this Friday night audience at this time. So let's certainly try and look at what else we can do and remain positive in our approach to it. Thanks.
Okay, Paddy.
I was interested by what Andy was saying. I started out thinking, oh no, I don't think I agree with this, Andy. And then you sort of like pivoted halfway through, and then I thought, oh no, actually, no, that makes sense. This sort of idea of if you. I'm going back to the original reason for this was the way that our candidate in Folkestone. I mean, the way he tries to address it is a different type of world is possible sort of approach. I didn't actually hear it, but I'm guessing that was the approach. And Andy was saying, well, that's a bit lost on people. Which is true, you know, I can see that. And then Adam was saying, well, you know, maybe we should think about concentrating on criticising capitalism. I mean, this is an old debate. I actually think that we spend all of our time criticising capitalism and almost none of our time actually trying to paint a picture of the alternative. I think that we're very, very one-sided. And the problem I have with that is that it makes us sound like every other bloody half two-bit lefty organisation. I mean, quite often, you know, if you were to read some of our stuff, you'd have to look closely to distinguish it from things that other groups would put. I mean, it's not that we're completely the same, but somebody who wasn't really au fait wouldn't be able to tell why we were different, because all they're seeing is a criticism of capitalism. And you can see that with the SWP, you can get that with the SWP, you can get that with, you know, any of these little left groups. Where our USP is precisely the thing that we don't talk about, which is what the alternative society would look like. And if I cast my mind a long way back to what it was that got me interested in sort of radical anarchist stroke libertarian stroke socialist ideas in the first place, it was asking myself a question at a young and sort of impressionable age: does the world have to be like this? I watched the news; it was just god awful. It was horrible stuff going on all the time, And I was as kind of young as you knew, and I thought, does the world really have to be like this? And it made me want to find out if this was the case or if there was some alternative. And so when I came across ideas that were talking about an alternative, I ate that up. I just devoured all that stuff and I looked into it. And I was, and this is, you know, where I came across sort of anarchist ideas, but, you know, later on I came across the socialist ideas, which I thought, well, this is sort of anarchist, only a bit better thought out. So I was happy with that. So I think that we've got to be able to paint pictures for people. We've got to be able to show people what it is that we're proposing. It's no good just criticising capitalism. I know I've said this a million times in the past, so I won't labour the point. But just in as a matter of interest, we're just looking at updating the Socialism as a Practical Alternative pamphlet. And there was a bit of a project going on. And when I came to read it, it was just really closely read it recently. Actually, the way it was written, it was trying to be everything. It was trying to do too much. It was trying to include the case against capitalism. And I thought, well, this is the problem that we have in the party. We're always trying to do too much. And it billed itself as a socialism as a practical alternative, and yet half of it, probably three quarters of it, in fact, was the case against capitalism. So I thought, this is our default setting. You know, wind up a socialist, set them off, and they will rant against capitalism. But what we really want to be doing is not ranting against capitalism, but putting practical proposals about socialism to people. And if they don't get it, like Andy's workmates, well, you know, fine. But I think there's plenty of people out there that would get it. And in fact, there's probably plenty of people out there who would say, oh, you know what, I've thought the same thing myself, you know. But they're not going to say that if we just present them with a barrage of anti-capitalist rhetoric that they could get from 20 other places. Anyway, that's all I've got to say.
Okay. Pat, you want to say something?
Yeah. I don't really see why there has to be one way, or why doing one thing means you're not doing another thing. So I don't think we sort of speak in a vacuum. You know, you don't suddenly launch into something that someone else is saying something, or there's some conversation. If that's your opening, I have to say I don't get so many openings like that these days. But if you start like that, you start from where you are, and either you say something about why it's that, something about capitalism, why it's that way, or you say how things could be different. But I don't think one way has to why we don't have to be all one way, as it were. We don't have to be all saying how bad capitalism is, because, or rather, we're explaining why capitalism is bad, what is wrong, because it's been so clear during all the ones I could bear to listen to, all the discussions during the election campaign, but people's problems, that they want something better to happen, but some have given up on politicians and given up, and you know, they won't be any different. But they want them to be able to do something that we know that governments can't solve anything. They're not, as I said before, you know, the good king of the fairy towers. They're ruled by the system, or the system rules them, rather than governments ruling the system. But I have. Sometimes I've decided to say what I really think. And many years ago, when I was going to do sort of English conversation with women who were not primarily English speakers. And at some time, something had been going on in East Ham. I can't remember what it was. There'd been some troubles in the streets or something. And at that time, the woman I was seeing was called Mrs. Khan, and her husband was there at some time and was saying something about this. So I thought, oh, well, I'll say what I really think, which I did. And then he talked to me about Capital that he'd read. There'd been some time when he hadn't been for some reason sort of with his wife and had spent time sort of reading Capital. So I thought that was interesting, and I was pleased that I decided to say you know not to make polite conversation, but to say what I really thought about the situation. And that has happened on other occasions, odd occasions, and when something has happened and there's been an opportunity to say something, so that can sometimes be helpful. But I haven't done so well with Lee, the man that comes once a year to service the fireplace. At some time, I think I mentioned that he said something, and again, I sort of said something about what I thought, and before he left, I had standard there, and I didn't push it on him. I just held it and said, well, would you be interested? And yes, he was, and he went. And when I saw him the next year, yes, he'd read the standard, and he didn't quite see how it would work, but that was okay. But unfortunately, when he came back the following year, he was all Graham Hancock, and I found it difficult to get a word in on that occasion. But this time, when he came, his father was going to be in the local election for the Reform Party. So, and he seemed to have gone even more onto conspiracy theories. So, I hadn't really done very well in that connection. I hadn't managed to get a convert, as it were. But anyway, that's it. I'll finish at that point.
Okay, thanks. Have you withdrawn your request to speak, Andy? If you have, I can answer something that Freddie said. I mean, there's nobody here from Kent and Sussex branch or from Folkestone, but in fact, the party there or the branch there has contested every single, you know, local election, parish council, town council elections, county council elections, and general elections, you know, for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years or even more. And we've contested this particular seat 3 times. And each time the vote has been the same. It's been 68, 70, and now it's 71. It's actually gone up 3 votes. Since last time. So I think, in fact, there could well be a core of people somewhere in Folkestone who are deliberately voting for us all the time. It won't be 70, but the branch did try to make contact with these people by, you know, as well as having the post office distribute, you know, the 47,000 leaflets. They produced an extra, I don't know, 5 or 6 thousand, which they distributed in the two particular wards that they've been contesting at the local level, with a view to try and make contact with these, you know, with some of these people. So, I mean, that is their strategy there, and I don't know. I mean, you know, 70 isn't all that much. But incidentally, if we had strict proportional representation, the vote we got would entitle us to one MP out of 650. But I mean, it would entitle all sorts of other groups and things to one MP. But to answer Paddy's point, in that Hustings meeting, there was a Trotskyist candidate. But I mean, you know, when she spoke, she wasn't advocating getting rid of capitalism. You know, far from it. She was advocating various local initiatives and opening the school. And she was some sort of local activist. So I think that even if we are saying the same criticism of capitalism, we're putting forward a different way out. I mean, you know, they think you can, at least they say that. They think that you can get reforms within capitalism, and that's what they advocate in election. I think Howard, if he's still here, can confirm this, because we had a discussion on this as to what the Trotskyist candidates say when they appear at hustings and when they contest elections. Anyway, that's to answer Freddie's point. Well, we've reached. After 9 o'clock, so we've had a discussion. Unless anybody else particularly wants to say something,
Adam, can I speak? It's Janet.
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah.
My name doesn't seem to come up at all, so I can't do the hand.
That's Eddie Carter.
Yeah. Oh, you see it as that, do you? All right. Can't even see that. Everybody's made lovely contributions, and thank you all for that. I listen to the World Service through the night quite a lot on the radio, and you hear all sorts of people who are busy doing all sorts of conservation things, and they're worried about butterflies, they're worried about the land uses on farms, they're worried about watercourses. And so there's an awful lot of worrying going on over all sorts of issues, which are actually, even within capitalism, can be helped. And I feel the party is like spinning a web and throwing the strands out, but not connecting up, not helping anyone else to connect up. And perhaps we ought to do that. It's interesting that we can write about Marx and his theories of surplus value. And we throw that out, and then we throw out something else on some other topic. But we neither do we connect everything up, and everything is really connected in the world and should be joined up in a different sort of way. And I think that some people are quite good at doing this, writing stories, like Ron Cook and the other woman, I think, I can't remember her name, who we published a book of hers. And so there are people that are creatively in a literature way and able to draw threads together and create stories that establish or show our ideas in a way that isn't economic, doesn't seem to say you have to know these equations. So that's one little point. The other thing is, I think that the Lib Dem deputy leader, he enticed a lot of people because he's obviously a very caring person, and he also did one episode on how he was looking after his an invalid or disabled son or autistic son, badly autistic. And so he would have drawn a lot of sympathetic people to him because he was actually living the worry that a lot of people do have in caring for their children when they haven't got or can't afford to pay for somebody to come in and look after them 24 hours a day. So I think he got a lot of support on that angle, rather, as well as his acrobatics. And the other thing is, Pat and I live in the Balderton and Billericay area, and they had to have, and I think they were the last constituency to send their count in, because they had to have, I think it was 3 counts. They couldn't get it right. It was very close. And I'm not sure what the result was, because I haven't actually heard the end result. But somebody from in the Midlands on up north was parachuted down to go into that constituency where there was a retiring Conservative, because it was meant to be a safe seat. And they were the chairperson of the Conservative Party. Anyway, I don't think they won. I think the other group got in, but I'm not sure about that. So somebody could tell me. And does anybody know whether Jess Phillips got in? Because I think she was in danger of having her seat taken away by, yes, from her did. By the. Oh, yes, she did. She?
Yes, she's
right. Oh, good.
800 votes, By 800 votes, yeah.
Well, it wasn't very much then, was it?
But Janet, Janet, I think the Conservative man won in our
did he?
Area.
Did he?
Yes,
in the
yes.
End? Oh.
It was a lower vote, a lower...
He won. He won by 20 votes, as Darren has just pointed out.
Really?
After two recounts.
Well, that's more or less all I wanted to say, actually. Thank you. If we could just draw the threads together of what we know about society, about capitalism, about socialism, if we could do that in some sort of way. But it's not easy. Anyway, thank you. Bye.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Freddie?
Yeah, comrades, I don't want to final word here, but just a plug in. If MD happens to be in the Durham area a week tomorrow, it's the Miners' Gala, and the party will be having a presence there. So if you happen to be around anywhere near Durham, you know where to get us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Right. Nobody else want to say anything? So next week, I think normal service is resumed, and I think Richard Field is Richard Field is giving a talk, but he wasn't well, so I hope he's better to do it next. So that's what's happening next Friday.